2020 has a certain ring to it. It's the beginning of a new decade, and it's also a description of perfect vision. So no pressure for the man who has been the editor of a special edition of The Economist magazine, Daniel Franklin. And that edition looks ahead with predictions about the trends for the year ahead. It's called The World in 2020. And, well, it's judgment time for Donald Trump and Brexit and the world economy, says Daniel. He's been the editor of the special edition for 17 years. This year, guest writers, including Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, give their views about things like online extremism, politics, artificial intelligence, sports, and more in 2020. And Daniel Franklin, who's now diplomatic editor of The Economist, joins us now. Hello there.
Hello.
Congratulations on the change of job, by the way. After 17 years, you will not be doing the World in 2021 issue. Why are you stepping back from the project?
Well, I think 17 years is a pretty good run. I've enjoyed it enormously. It's been a tremendous privilege to do it. But I think it's always a good idea to have renewal. And for the past couple of years, the deputy editor on this product has been Tom Standage, who's brilliant. He'll be taking over, and I'm sure we'll take it from strength to strength.
What insights do you take away from doing this for 17 years? I guess every year is different. Does 2020 feel any different to the other 16 that you've looked after?
Well, I think as you said in your introduction, it has a ring to it, doesn't it, 2020? So it seems to be quite a good one to go out on. Start of a new decade as well, which is a little bit special and makes you think perhaps a tad more long term. But I think the main thing I take from doing it all these years is humility. I mean, we know that predictions is a perilous business to be in. Everybody's interested in them. We all do it all the time, and you try to have your best guess and ask smart people to have good thoughts about the future. But you're going to get things wrong as well. So I think you never have to get carried away with the idea that you're going to get everything right.
We know that the U.S. election, presidential election, will dominate. 2016 was very ugly. How ugly is 2020 going to get?
Well, if it's humanly possible, I think even uglier. Every sign is that it's going to be, even more money spent, even nastier. You've got, of course, the impeachment background to it going on right now, and that guarantees it to be bitterly divided. But it's intriguing because the Democratic field is still very large, so I think that race will go on some way into the year, so we won't know for quite a while who is going to be set against Donald Trump. And then the actual showdown between Trump and the Democratic candidate is going to be followed avidly by the whole world round, because 8 years of Donald Trump will be very different from 4 years of Donald Trump.
Do you have any sense of which way the Democrats are going to go with their nominee? A couple have dropped out. I think Cory Booker's the latest.
Yeah, a few have dropped out, and I think there is clearly some front runners. You know, Joe Biden is hanging in there as a perhaps with more resilience than one would have even imagined at the beginning. So I think he has to be a front runner, if not the front runner. And then Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg vying for that position. And don't forget Mike Bloomberg. He's not reckoned to have much chance, but he has a lot of money, so he could stay in as long as he likes. He can afford to stay in. And I think his hope is that no one else comes through impressively, and he can come in after those first primaries and make a big showing in the larger primaries where advertising spending makes more of a difference.
In 2018, you regretted not being bolder in 2018 in your predictions about Donald Trump for 2019. So have you learned your lesson?
Well, I think Trump, one thing that you learn is that Trump is always going to be Trumpier than you think.
Yeah.
In 2019, I think it's an intriguing year for him because he has some interest in, first of all, not rocking the boat perhaps as much as he has in the past, because he wants the economic growth to carry on, and that's a crucial part of his narrative going into the election. And he perhaps has some interest to bring home some of the deals after a lot of arguing that he's done. So we've just seen the new NAFTA agreement being approved and something of a truce in the trade war with China, although that's far from the end of the story. And he's no longer quite as disruptive as he was, for example, with the NATO allies. So you may see a slightly different Donald Trump in this election year. But perhaps the world is so used to seeing him through a certain prism that a lot of people might not recognize that straight away.
This is a nice idea. You interviewed artificial intelligence for this issue. It, by the way, told you that Donald Trump would be defeated. Why did you decide to engage with AI like this, and did it tell you anything else interesting?
I think it tells you, first of all, how spookily almost lifelike an AI can sound. If you look really closely, perhaps it doesn't make a whole lot of sense what the AI is saying, but it's very plausible. And of course, it's trawling through a huge database. And so it can make a pretty good imitation of pretending to be interviewed like a human being, you know. So take the answers with a pinch of salt, but take the fact that it can sound plausibly human as something that we have to be wary of, both be impressed by the power of this computing, what it can do, but also slightly alarmed that it could fool people if you're not careful.
Brexit, of course, will be big in 2020. Last year, I think you likened it to murder on the Orient Express. I wonder if it's now a bit more like a Japanese bullet train racing to the last stop.
Yeah, well, we know that we are going to have Brexit. That's a big change following the election in December, which gave a clear majority to Boris Johnson's Conservatives. There's now no doubt it's gone through Parliament, and very shortly Britain will no longer be a member of the European Union. But that is only a stage in what will be a very long Brexit saga, because there's still the question. That's the divorce agreement, but it's not doesn't tell you much about what the future relationship will be between the United Kingdom and the European Union. So that negotiation is going to get underway very shortly after Brexit. And it's going to be quite a tricky one, I think, for both sides. And there's another deadline looming when the transition arrangements are due to come to an end at the end of the year. So there'll be a lot of brinksmanship in the year ahead.
Why did you want readers to hear from our Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern?
Well, I think she, of course, for sad reasons, we saw a lot of her on our screens in 2019. And I think on the whole, people were hugely impressed with the way New Zealand responded to the tragedy. So I think there's a universal interest in what the lessons are from that, and what lessons were drawn in particular about the spread of bad stuff on social media, and how you might respond in other ways to try to prevent attacks like this happening again. You're not going to ever prevent them totally, but at least limit the possibility that they happen and limit the damage done when they do happen.
Do you agree with her that meaningful progress has been made limiting the ability of hateful ideologies to spread online?
Well, I think the proof of that will come when something similar happens again, and which sadly I suspect at some point it will, and whether there is a more effective, whether these safeguards that she refers to in her contribution do actually kick in effectively. So one hopes yes.
Will 2020 be the year that tech giants face more mandatory regulations?
Well, they're certainly facing a lot of scrutiny, not least because of the election. I think, again, they're going to be in the spotlight as to whether they're used in America for nefarious purposes by bad foreign actors. We flag up Instagram as perhaps one of the platforms to watch this year. It seems very harmless, but has a lot of the attributes that were used last time for spreading stuff with taking people slightly unawares. But I think the actual breaking up of tech giants is probably not for this coming year, not for an election year, but could happen, or could be on the agenda more firmly after that. But there is going to be a lot of talk about taxing tech companies through the OECD, trying to put together a regime there, and a lot of scrutiny of the whole question of privacy and whether data is being used responsibly or not.
I'm speaking with Daniel Franklin. He's a diplomatic editor of The Economist, and he's also put together The World in 2020, The Economist's annual special edition with predictions for the year ahead. What will change when it comes to climate change, Daniel?
Big year for this, I think, because we have in Glasgow towards the end of the year, the latest of the big international gatherings, the COP26. And this is one where national governments are supposed to present their more ambitious plans or have ready their more ambitious plans for meeting the Paris targets. And so far, you know, the scale of ambition has been nowhere near good enough. So at the national level, that rather major thing will be going on. Meanwhile, at the business level, I think there's a lot of pressure in boardrooms to be more responsible, to set targets themselves at the industry level for reducing carbon emissions and doing other activities, that taking other action that reduces environmental damage generally. And then there's pressure from below. We've seen the extraordinary momentum behind Greta Thunberg, and so the I think grassroots pressure is only growing. And the big question, I think, for 2020, I think, is a bit of a crunch year as to whether all this talk at the national level, at the business level, is really leading to concrete actions, credible actions that that will make a difference, or whether it is just a lot of rhetoric. So I think it's an important year for this, because a lot of things are coming together at all these different levels.
Some interesting anniversaries this year. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty turns 50, and I wonder if that treaty is starting to show its age.
Well, it certainly is, and what you also have in 2020 is the five-yearly review conference known as RevCon, which is going to be a pretty uncomfortable affair, I think, because a lot of the nuclear agreements that have been in place have either ended or are falling apart. The INF Treaty on Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces has been abandoned by America and Russia. The New START Treaty, which concerns longer range nuclear weapons and has very intrusive inspections regimes, that's going to run out if it's not extended by the beginning of 2021. And at the moment, it's not looking very optimistic that Russia and America are terribly interested, or certainly on the American side, doesn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm for that. And then, you know, you've seen the fraying of the Iran deal, and we could be entering a period where we have a sort of new nuclear arms race. It's not a cheerful thought for the year ahead, but I think it is a concern that this great bargain that lies behind the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, that those countries that don't have nuclear weapons agree to refrain from getting them so long as the nuclear powers work towards reducing and ultimately eliminating their own nuclear weapons. That's looking very shaky, and that's why it'll, I think, be a rather fraught review conference in the spring.
The first baby boomers will turn 65 in 2020. What's the significance, the implications of that?
Well, we call it the decade of the yold, the young old. So, you know, remember that phrase, perhaps. This is a generation that is going to be the biggest ever cohort of those sort of prime retirement age. So not only bigger, they're going to be fitter, healthier, and more active than any previous generation. And they're going to be disrupting everything from consumer markets to labor markets, and no doubt politics as well. So watch out for the old not just in 2020, but in the 2020s, I would say.
Why will 2020 be a big year for Mars?
This past year, 2019, was a big year for the moon. It was the 50th anniversary of the lunar landings. And so the moon, there were a lot of lunar missions and a lot of interest in that. Well, in 2020, the alignment of the planets means there's a window to send missions to Mars, and a lot of different missions are planned. China has one, the United Arab Emirates has one. That's quite a big thing for that part of the world. The United States, not surprisingly, has one, and Europe does too. So it's I think you're going to be hearing a lot of Mars talk in 2020.
We passed the 50th anniversary of Man on the Moon, one of the biggest TV events of all time, and will 2020 be the year that the streaming wars eventually bring about the death knell of broadcast television?
I don't know about the death knell, but certainly the streaming wars are upon us, and in a way, for consumers, it's a bit of a golden era we can expect, because so many services are now piling in and creating an enormous amount of often very, very good content. There's a land grab going on for the territory of streaming attention. Now, if you want to watch all your favorite programs and you have to sign up to a lot of different services, this can get quite expensive, but there is a huge amount of choice. And it probably can't last forever. There'll probably be some sort of consolidation going on. Not all these players will survive, or they'll be taken over and the spending will get a bit more sensible. But for the moment, enjoy the cornucopia of content. And it's also a streaming excitement in the gaming area, because, you know, the technology is there now, or nearly there, for the speed and the capacity of the internet to carry games in real time, and allowing a lot more people to play them, to lowering the barriers to entry, so you no longer have to have a dedicated console. So that's getting underway too. So streaming generally, both for television and for gaming, is really frontier and fascinating stuff in 2020.
Will the Tokyo Olympics be a significant event for the world?
Well, I think they always are, the Olympics. It's a huge event where the world's attention is focused on a particular place, and that means and a particular event over a number of weeks. It's always an opportunity for the host country. I think for Japan, it will be a particular opportunity, building on actually the success that they had with the Rugby World Cup, which went, I think, in the end, worked very well for them. You know, Japan is still the third biggest economy in the world, but it doesn't get as much attention as you might expect, because of the limelight that now is grabbed by China. But it still is a fascinating place, and it has a chance to present itself or represent itself to the world. They want to attract a lot of tourists through this and have a legacy from it. So I think that's a big opportunity for them. And they're also, you know, quite apart from the hosting, there are some intriguing new Olympic sports, or sports that are making their debut at the Olympics, rock climbing, for example, and skateboarding. So I think there'll be some fascination with that, especially.
We're still licking our wounds in New Zealand over that Cricket World Cup final. Cricket will change in 2020. I think the phrase you use is it becomes a little more American. First I'd heard of this. Can you tell us about the 100?
Well, that's in this part of the world. I don't know whether it's yet coming to New Zealand, but I'm sure a cricket-loving nation will watch it with great interest, because it's the latest attempt to renew the excitement of cricket. Although the World Cup was terrific and generated a lot of interest, it's still a pretty long game compared with most other sports, and the Americanization of it is taking it shorter and shorter, so an even shorter format of the game called the 100, with a lot of razzmatazz and teams no longer based on the traditional counties but cities, and a draft which has happened on live television, another kind of American idea. We'll see whether that Americanization goes down well. I think it'll be intriguing.
2020, by the way, is one of those numbers that prompted a lot of predictions in the past. You've looked at some that go back more than 100 years. Does our world in 2020 match their vision at all?
Well, of course, you can't expect people to get things truly accurately, but one or two things are not too bad. I invited someone who had actually written a book about three decades ago on the world in 2020 to say what did he get right and what did he get wrong, and what does that teach him for looking ahead to the next 30 years. And the answers to that are pretty interesting. I mean, he got some things wrong, but he did, I think, say, get right the rise of China and in particular. And he claims to have predicted in a certain way Brexit as well. So I'd have to go back to the original text to make sure I believe that properly. But it's intriguing.
What are we doing in 2020 that will horrify our grandchildren?
That's a lovely question. And it's asked by actually Tom Standage, who I mentioned earlier, the next editor of the publications, sort of parlor game you could play at home. You know, every generation, I think, does things pretty often unthinkingly that are actually in future years become seen as absolutely taboo. So what are tomorrow's taboos today? And he offers a few ideas. The ones that that I particularly have some sympathy for, I think, are the idea that, well, you know, you didn't do anything near enough to tackle climate change, and yet you knew, you could see that this was happening. So all sorts of behaviors that we have today that were bad for the climate, we carried on doing regardless. A specific one is eating meat. Now, I don't know whether this will come to be, but, you know, maybe next generations or next generation, but one will be appalled that we actually ate meat when you could have delicious and more economical and environmentally friendly alternatives.
Well, the special edition of The Economist is called The World in 2020. Daniel Franklin, thank you for your service over the last 17 years. You've done a great job of creating what we now look forward to each year. And I hope you enjoy stepping down the new challenges and really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.